The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk
with Kia.
The NATO summit took place in Turkey this week, and on paper at least, the summit ended with a message of solidarity with NATO allies, including Trump, affirming their ironclad commitment to collective defence. Now, our next guest is Rose Gottemoeller, the former Deputy General Secretary, or Secretary General, I should say, of NATO. She's in Dublin for the Law Society of Ireland's Summer School 2026, which is taking place today and tomorrow. Rose, thank you indeed for talking to us on The Hard Shoulder today. You have huge experience in various administrations and in NATO, and I think you're probably used over the years to a certain world order. What do you think today when you look at the world of Putin, of Netanyahu, of Donald Trump and labelling his opponents scum? Do you worry? Are you frightened for our world?
It is a bit of an autocrat club, isn't it? And they're not very nice people, any of them. So, yes, I do worry that we are in a world of leaders who perhaps don't care as much about sustaining peace and stability in the world, and perhaps don't care as much as they should about the concerns of their own people, of their publics. And certainly they are tending to slide away from democratic practice, democratic governance, which is a great concern to me in my own country, in the United States. So it is a testing period, a period of great trial and difficulty. I, for one, find that it's heartening to see an institution like NATO continue to be more or less reliable in terms of its ability to get to agreement at the highest level, even with all of Donald Trump's temper tantrums in the first day of the summit meeting, and to continue to confirm that major, major commitment that the NATO member states make to each other, that is, all for one and one for all. If one member state is attacked and asks for help, the others will come to its aid and help defend it.
You have described NATO, I think, recently as a nervous but functioning alliance. The future of NATO, because, I mean, we saw really mixed signals coming from Donald Trump over the last few days. Yes, in the end, it was quite positive, but he had a go at Spain. He started talking about Greenland again and his intentions about Greenland. Do you think NATO still has a strong future?
Yes. May I say first that it was a bit of deja vu all over again for me, because I remember the Trump arrival at the summit of NATO in June of 2018. And again, temper tantrums, berating the allies for not spending enough on defense. My boss at the time, Jens Stoltenberg, currently the finance minister of Norway, he was quite concerned that Trump would throw a temper tantrum at the final press conference. But instead, it was all sweetness and light and how much he loved NATO and how it was a great meeting. So I was seeing the same thing in the last 2 days in Ankara, to be honest. And I think that's a bit of Trump's MO, to first, you know, throw a tantrum and then to kiss and make up, or to try to do so. But you were asking me about NATO and its future and why I think it might be reliable. Honestly, I'm, again, as an American, accustomed to many, many years of NATO riding on the coattails of the United States of America and not doing enough to provide for its own defense. And so when I see now, not only has it been Trump who has been berating the allies to spend more on defense, but they are very concerned about the threat posed by Vladimir Putin's Russia. And they have, I would say, really pulled together now to begin to modernize their armed forces, to be ready to play a role in European defense, even absent the United States. And to me, that is a big step forward. It shows not only is the institution surviving, but it is actually entering into a new phase of its development.
Okay, interesting. I don't know how au fait you are, Rose, with Ireland's neutrality. Obviously, it's a topic for discussion here at the moment. We're ending our so-called triple lock, where we have to seek UN Security Council approval to deploy peacekeeping forces. It's proving quite contentious in some areas. I mean, do you have a view about Ireland, its neutrality, and whether or not Ireland should play a role in EU defence? I think joining NATO is obviously a long way off if that were to ever happen. But in terms of EU defence, do you have a view on where Ireland should be?
Yes, and in fact, I was just speaking about that today in my keynote address at the Law Society. Very good discussion, by the way, and obviously a very smart group of people. But I believe that Ireland needs to think hard about the future of its own security and its own defense because of the way the threats are quickly evolving at this time on the back of new technological developments, in particular the emergence of a proliferation of drone and missile capabilities at all ranges. And these drones, some of them will be very smart and autonomous. So they represent the kind of defense innovation that's going on right now. But they are not only going to be in the hands of state actors, but also non-state actors, terrorists possibly posing a threat with drone capabilities going forward. And so I think it will be in Ireland's interest, for example, to have very good integrated air and missile defense and to be able to defend Ireland's airspace against the incursion of drones and missiles. That's one example. I also spoke about hybrid threats. These are irregular warfare threats like cable cutting off the west coast of Ireland that I know has been a great concern, and being able to work together with others in order to be ready to address such threats. I know that, again, Ireland has recently signed an MOU with the UK in order to train and exercise against cable cutting threats. And frankly, we've seen in the Baltic Sea with the Russians threatening to cut cables and in some cases apparently accomplishing that when the French naval unit showed up in force, the Russians cut it out. So there is a role for deterrence in this case, and for Ireland to be able to deter, it would deny the Russian Federation their goals in these hybrid tactics and in these hybrid campaigns.
I think there'll be a lot of people listening this afternoon who will completely agree with that. There will also, given the nature of the debate here in Ireland at the moment, there will be people who disagree. And the argument they would make is that Ireland should not be part of this, in what they would call the industrial military complex, and that we should be very careful about going down that road. How would you respond to that?
Yes, I totally understand, and I totally recognize the longstanding Irish commitment to neutrality, and it is, I think, very much part of the DNA of this country, and so very, very important. But I've just been thinking that there is a way to think about deterrence that is not, as we think about military deterrence, often involving the necessity of retaliation, of being able to assure retaliation in any attack on the country. And that does take one down the road of defense as we think about it in many other defense and deterrence as we think about it in many other settings. That's deterrence by threat of retaliation. There's something also called deterrence by denial, and that is being able to, in a resilient way, to defend oneself so that the opponent, the aggressor, sees that his objective is denied. And one hopes he loses heart and goes away. And this is the kind of deterrence that perhaps the Republic of Ireland should be considering now, given the proliferation of these threats.
Okay, really interesting. Can I ask you as well about the conflict in Iran? We've seen in the last few days the breaking down of the ceasefire that existed. Is that going to be the new normal, do you think, for the foreseeable future? That kind of process of tit-for-tat attacks, then maybe a temporary ceasefire, and then things breaking down again. Do you fear that's what we're looking at for the foreseeable future?
I hope not, but it does show the necessity of very careful negotiations. I remember, although I was not a direct participant, I remember the negotiation of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action in the Obama administration, where all of the details of the agreement were worked out, including all the details of its implementation and monitoring and verification measures as well, so that the Iranians knew it was a step-by-step approach. They had to perform what they were committed to do before they were rewarded with relief from sanctions, for example. And the same went for the U.S. and the EU side. Participating in those negotiations, they had to fulfill certain commitments before the Iranians would move on. That is the way you get a reliable and implementable agreement. And in the case of this Iran deal, as you know, a lot of it was left to be done afterwards with some notion that somehow all of these details could be worked out by August. But with nothing really agreed in advance, it shows how fragile such an arrangement can be that we're seeing the breakdown of it now.
It certainly does. Rose Guttenmuller, former Deputy Secretary General of NATO, thank you so much for talking to The Hard Shoulder today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With Kia.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.